welcome to What the Fantasy, episode 29. As you can see, we're back to whole again. We have been reunited. I am Brandon Hay at HayB3 on Twitter.
And I am Zada Cantabedian at ZCantFF. And I'm glad to be back.
Glad to have you back. So first, to start off, just tell us about the film school that you went through and everything you learned.
Yeah, I actually, so I was gone because I attended the Scouting Academy, which is headed up by Dan Hatman. He's a director over there, and it's really, really great course for people who are interested in learning how to do film evaluation. It's a rigorous process. I'll tell you, I got asked by a lot of people how it was and what to expect when you go in there. And the one thing I told people is you need time. You need a lot of time because every single position on both sides of the ball. And it's just, it requires a lot of detail and a lot of tension. So, I was waking up early in the mornings at 4 o'clock in the morning and sitting down for an hour and a half and then coming home and doing like 3 hours at home. So I'll talk about my experience with it. I learned a great deal about it. There are a lot of really good videos you can watch. A lot of former scouts, current scouts, former GMs give a lot of great recorded lectures. And I was writing down lectures. I was taking notes during lectures in the morning. So I would listen to the lectures in the morning. I would take notes and then I would play them back on my Microsoft Word app. And I would play them back to myself during work. So I was constantly absorbing information and I was playing the lectures during work, absorbing information about different techniques. I think my favorite was offensive line technique, just offensive line position as a whole, because I feel like it's such an integral part of the offense and us being like fantasy centric. It's that one part that always goes overlooked. We talk about everything else on offense besides the offensive line, and it has such a major part in how the offensive players play, right? So you learn a lot about blocking technique and you learn a lot about, techniques with tackles as opposed to guards and centers, right? There's a world of difference and you learn a lot about the size and how it translates to technique. And then you get to watch, when you learn about blocking, you get to watch wide receivers block and running backs block. And you say, okay, I can understand now what it looks like when a running back has good pass pro reps in college. I can understand what it looks like when a wide receiver is blocking out on the line of scrimmage. You know what you're looking at. It gives you more context. So, and honestly, I didn't even finish the entire thing because Joe Brighton Football Guys reached out to me and offered me a position, and I was super enthusiastic about that, and I took up the offer. So I slowed down with my stuff at Scouting Academy and I explained that to Dan, and he was kind enough to offer me retroactively offer me the weeks that since Joe reached out to me. He's like, all right, just tell me when Joe reached out to you and then we'll just give you those weeks in summer. He was really cool about it. So I'm not gonna be taking a hiatus though, like in summer. Like I'm gonna be back. I'm back with the show. I'm gonna be working with the Scouting Academy, but I'm still gonna be doing stuff with the show. I want to do as much more at the Scouting Academy as possible. But it was a very good experience. I feel like I've grown a lot. I feel like I've matured a lot. I feel a lot more confident in the things I see on film, and they give you a really structured thing. Like prior to me going to the Scouting Academy, when you listen to people who were, vetted scouts, either through the industry or, whatever other, either through like the NFL organizational college, high school, they throw around terms like, he's a very good blocker. He has average size. He has elite this. He's good at that. Those terms are very good. Elite, average, adequate. Those have meaning. Like they don't just throw that around like, oh, he's average. He's good. Those have definitive operational meanings. So I learned all about that. Now, so I listened to guys like the guys from Saturday to Sunday podcasts. Like they use very good, good a lot. Like a lot of scouts will use those terms. And those terms each mean something, right? So like, average, solid, that's the cutoff. Like when you hear scouts talking about players, like anything below that, they're going to be like practice squad or they're not going to make the team. Like you want to hear good. You want to hear very good. Elite obviously means ready to go day one, compete with the best in the NFL from day one, right? Very good's starter caliber. Good is like situational, like rotational caliber, and solid is like developmental, has room to grow, but will make the final roster. Like, so all these things like mean a lot. And there's so much structure. There's so much language. And there's so much, it's just learning how to type up a scouting report based on like what GMs want to hear these days. Like GMs want to hear about offense first, right? So like you need to talk the guy up, tell him what he can do. We want to talk about what players can do. That's what they want to know. Tell them that first in a report, and then we'll finish with what they can't do last. So there's like a lot of stuff, but you know, as you can see, I learned a lot, and I still have a lot more to go. And even after this, there's more to grow. So yeah.
No, that's good information, because I think sometimes the word elite probably gets used too much, especially in the fantasy community, where it could be like someone's very good at it, but we use the term elite in everything. And that's good to know that. And I had a question when you were learning more about the blocking and everything. Does that help you better evaluate running backs now, since you know exactly what the linemen are trying to do, and where the running backs are actually supposed to go and everything, you know, that does that help you evaluate that a little bit better?
Absolutely. 100%. And that's one of the reasons why I love learning about the offensive line. You know, you don't also learn about blocking, but you also learn about different blocking schemes and the common blocking techniques used by each individual lineman, right? Like most linemen, like the guard will use a certain block on a certain technique. You know, you learn about down blocks, you learn about when to use down blocks, cut blocks, when reach blocks are effective, the difference between combo blocks and double team blocks, how to effectively place your knees on a double team block, how left tackles need to play, how their techniques, how their man-to-man alignment needs to be with defensive ends. There's a lot of technique in pass blocking and run blocking. And run blocking, you know, I wouldn't have appreciated Kenneth Walker's abilities as much as I do now if I didn't understand Michigan's run blocking schemes and the way they pulled off like their ISO run blocking schemes. I think they did a really good job with the way Kenneth Walker was blocked up. I think, and I was going to make a tweet today. There's a Connor Hayward is going. He was an H-back that played at Michigan. He got drafted by the Steelers, and he blocked the hell. He was a blocking machine for Kenneth Walker, and he's going to be going to the Steelers now, and I'm assuming he's going to be taking up the same role, playing an H-back role with the Steelers. You know, this is besides the point, but like I'm just saying, like these are the things I picked up on. So, yes, to answer your question, yes, I did learn a lot and took a lot more away from it for running back purposes.
Well, that sounds great. Yeah, I'm glad you're back, and, you know, if you do need to take, you know, some time in the summer – We're here for you, so you can do that. So, you know, that's great. So talk about that. And then you did reach out to me that you wanted to do a rant today. So the floor is yours.
Okay, yeah, I'll keep it quick just because I went on for the academy so long. So yeah, I've never been a fan of slow drafts, right? I understood the relevance of slow drafts, but I always figured it was best to do drafts, get everybody in a certain time, and knock the draft out in like 20 minutes. And I just like it because I'm an action oriented guy. Like once the draft goes, I want to start going. Like I hate picking and then stopping and then waiting and then picking and stopping and waiting. But I understand we're all adults now and everybody has kids and jobs and families and lives. But like there's a lot of like abuse that comes with slow drafts. Like people just don't check, or people like wait for trades to be offered like for way too long. Like there should be, this is the way I think of it. The planet Earth shouldn't have to rotate once fully for one round of a slow draft to be completed. Like an entire planet rotates once, and one round still hasn't been completed yet. That's insane, dude. Like that's insane when you put it on a cosmic level. That's crazy. Like, okay, I have an idea, right? Okay, here's my pitch for slow draft. This is my pitch for slow draft. Okay, Brandon, you know like how we've been like, for 2 months, ever since the Super Bowl ended, we've been like, we watched the combine and then we had discussions after the combine and we updated and reformatted and we said, okay, this, you know, we started working with more information and we had discussions. We went in circles having discussions about players that we've been really high or low on. And then we were like, all right, we need the draft to get here. Let's get the draft get here. So we can have some draft capital so we can further adjust, and the draft capital adds weight. And we're like, all right, once the draft capital comes, we'll be set. We can draft these guys. But I got an idea. Why don't we make weight? Why don't we make people wait even longer and do this thing called the slow draft, where it'll take 8 hours more before your next selection, at hopefully 8 hours. That's a short length of time before your next pick. Like, I don't want to wait more to select these guys. Let's have a little get up in our step when it comes to these things. Like, we've been waiting to draft these guys for so long. Like, I can't do slow drafts, especially when we've been waiting so long to draft these guys because we've been talking for 2 months straight. So that was my rant. That's it.
It wasn't as heated as I thought it would be. I'm not going to lie. I'm a little disappointed, but I agree. Especially about the trade part. If you wait to start trade talks on your pick, for me, at least, I'll probably wait 20 minutes at max. And then, like, if no one sends an offer, I'm going to just pick. I get the timing and everything. But if the same person, say, you know, because most rookie drafts are four rounds. So if, say, you know, every person has four picks, if every pick they take 8 hours, I mean, that shouldn't happen. You know, if it's a one-time deal, I'm fine, maybe really busy. But, yeah, I totally agree. Slow drafts can, you know, especially with multiple people, and then, you know, say that people turn off the clock at like 10 p.m. and then you take, you know, say you're on the clock for like 3 hours, turns off at 10 p.m. they turn back on at 10 a.m. and another 8 hours. So you're looking at, you know, 15, 20 hours that someone's on the clock. So I totally agree with that. So, yeah, I definitely agree. So let's get into the fun stuff. Let's start talking about the draft. First, let's talk about our biggest surprises at the NFL draft. I'll do one, and then you can do one, and we can go back and forth. This is something that we've talked about and how we hate how Shanahan runs the 49ers. They drafted another running back in the third round. Not only a running back I didn't even think was going to get drafted. I had a discussion with some people. Some people say it doesn't matter to Elijah Moore. And I say, how does it not Elijah Moore, Elijah Mitchell. And my thing is, how does it not matter? Even if he drafted Trey Sermon last year in third round, he doesn't play. I mean, if you keep on wasting picks in the second or third round, I would think they have to play him eventually. And I mean, the 49ers are a good team, but they're not a perfect team where they can just waste picks on running backs when they already have like four running backs on the team. That part I just didn't understand. I thought they might go wide receiver there, since, you know, the whole Debo saga, we don't know what's going to happen with that. I think Shanahan's a good offensive mind. I just think he's bad when it comes to drafting some of these players and where they draft, especially the offensive skill position players.
I understand that, and I agree with that too, because here's the thing. Like, I'm a fan of Ty Davis Price. I liked how he ran at LSU. Like, he wasn't stellar. He was fine, but they ran a lot of power. They ran a lot of power scheme in LSU, and we all know that Kyle Shanahan runs zone schemes, Y zone schemes. And for you guys that don't know what zone is basically when they take offensive line and you see the entire offensive line move left or right. So you have all of offensive line moving down, but we don't know if he can run zone scheme. And that's the same thing with Trey Sermon, right? Like, we didn't know if Trey Sermon could run zone scheme, and I felt like he could, but that had to be one of the contributing factors to why Trey Sermon didn't play. Like, it's one thing to be kind of have some poor character, but it's another thing to be good at a scheme and helping a team win. So I feel like one outweighs the other more. I don't know why Trey Sermon again was benched, but yeah, Price wasn't a good scheme fit. He's a power back. He very straight ahead guy, some good footwork, but yeah, I agree. Anyways, getting to my first surprise. Tyquan Thorne being drafted day two by the Patriots made It you and I are Tyquan Thorne guys. We've expressed that. Tyquan Thorne is a great wide receiver that came out of Baylor. I like his skill. A lot of people don't like him. I think he's got the requisite skills to, you know, to be an NFL receiver, and so do the Patriots. But that wasn't the direction I was hoping they would go with that pick, because it, as much as he has, is a field stretcher, that's all he really is right now. And to draft just a plain field stretcher in day two doesn't add up to me. Like the Patriots always make questionable picks when it comes to wide receivers, right? We saw that with N'Keal Harry. They haven't really made a great pick coming out of the draft in, I don't know when, with a wide receiver. So I feel like they don't know really how to draft wide receivers. I feel like they need to speak to fantasy analysts when it comes to drafting wide receivers and when to use these guys in certain roles. I'll talk about why I think that is, because I'll bring it up later in another conversation we're going to have. But yeah, that was my first surprise.
All right, let me just say, we both expressed, how we like Tyquan Thornton. And I had him as my 13th wide receiver of this draft, which was pretty high compared to other people. So I really like him. I like that he got that draft capital. But yes, they could have definitely waited to probably the third, maybe the fourth to get him if they really liked him. They definitely reached for him. I will say, the day of day two in the morning, I looked at someone's mock draft and they had Tyquan Thornton going the second to the Cardinals. So I don't know. Maybe the NFL, maybe their teams. I don't know. That's just a guess. But still, I think they could have waited. I don't think he's that great of a talent that you had to jump on him in the second round. I will say, though, I am really interested how they're going to use him. He is mostly a deep threat, but he has really good hands on contact. He can, he can catch a slant, and go, 80 yards. So I hope they're creative with that. I think they improved the receiving core. I don't love Devontae Parker, but he's better than what they had. So he plays that possession type, and, Thornton could go deep. So interested what they do. I really hope Thornton does it because, I've really been pounding the table. So even though I think it was a reach, I can't really say that publicly a lot because, I've been pounding the table so hard for Thornton and I want him to do well. But yeah, I agree. That was a big surprise for me. And, while we're on that, Wandale Robinson getting picked in the second round, even though I like Wandale Robinson a lot too, I was surprised he went in the second round. So I know you're going to talk about, you changed it up. But I'll say quarterbacks dropping were surprising to me, especially Sam Howell. I thought, he would go second or third round, and to drop to the fifth round, and for Bailey Zappe out of Western Kentucky to go ahead of him, Zappe is a good quarterback, but I think Howell has way more upside. I don't see why he fell so much unless people were never high on Howell, a couple years ago, and, just us as a fantasy community thought he was going to go high. I don't know. But even though he went in the fifth round, I'm still not out on him because I think he went to a situation that is still possible with the Commanders, Carson Wentz. He might eventually get a spot, but obviously it's not a great situation since he went in the fifth round and, they're not going to wait around for him forever. So that was a big surprise for me.
Yeah, and I like Sam Howell just because of his dual ability as a rusher. And he's a solid quarterback. I think all the quarterbacks – falling as far as they did outside of Pickett. And I don't know what really makes Pickett a standout to go in the first and Howell to go in the fifth. There isn't really much delineation between the two for me. I mean, there's an argument to be made easily for Howell over Pickett, but yeah, definitely. He was one of my favorite. I liked him a lot before the draft, and I'm just glad he got picked because it was kind of sad to see all these guys falling so far, quarterbacks falling third, fourth, fifth round. This is so gross, man. They deserve, I know this isn't a strong QB class, but Jesus, there are some desperate, needy teams. There's some desperate QB teams out there. Just kind of sad to see. But yeah, glad he got picked. And hopefully he gets the job from Wentz, hopefully he gets an opportunity some point in the season. My second surprise was the AJ Brown trade. Obviously, that caught everybody off by surprise. I understand that they were up against the cap. I understand that AJ Brown had knees procedures done on both of his knees in January of 2021. And that probably may have led that. I'm saying that definitely did lead to his lackluster season. Like he was low in yards after contact and all these stats I looked at earlier. But I mean, unless they have some medical knowledge that we don't, where this is damning evidence, I don't think another team would have taken on this trade if they didn't know what AJ Brown, if they didn't do the research on AJ Brown. I don't know if, you know, it just seems like, hold on. Sorry. It just seems like a irrational move. And I understand getting Treylon Burks because AJ Brown was his highest comp player. When you look at the tape, Treylon Burks does play. You know, he has a requisite skill set that A.J. Brown does, but he is a much more raw receiver than A.J. Brown is. Yeah, it was just a surprise. I don't really agree with it. I think, you know, these guys deserve more. The second they have, like, a down year, like, A.J. Brown was the most complimentary wide receiver in terms of his efficiency and what he did with such low volume of receptions in that offense, that is exactly what they needed, right? Treylon Burks is not as athletic as A.J. Brown. A.J. Brown is huge, and he's much more athletic than Treylon Burks is. Not much more, but significantly more athletic than Treylon Burks. And he's more polished. What? Trying to replace him with a receiver like Treylon Burks, who still needs time in that offense, I don't believe it's going to get it done. Derrick Henry does offer a lot in the play action game, right? But thinking Treylon Burks is going to get it done the way AJ Brown did, you know, you guys, I think they got lucky to win the season last year. I can't really say that, but I'm just saying it was a surprise. AJ Brown was a surprise. So yeah.
Definitely a surprise, and I'm not sure how I feel about A.J. Brown with the Eagles. He's going to go down, I think, a little bit in my ranks because I just don't know if he's going to, you know, he's not going to get as many targets possibly that he did with the Titans because he was really the main guy. You got Devontae Smith there, and you got Goddard, and, you know, whatever receivers they throw to. With the Titans, it doesn't make sense to me because – I feel like their team's made to win now. Like, if you trade A.J. Brown, you know, with Treylon Burks and then bring in Malik Willis to, like, develop a couple years, rebuilding is fine. But you have Derrick Henry. Henry, you know, it's probably a couple more years. So I just didn't really understand that point. I did hear that they offered A.J. Brown, like, less than Christian Kirk got a year. So I think I did hear once that happened, pretty much A.J. Brown was out, you know, on the negotiations. So yeah, I don't know, but definitely the Eagles, I think, got him on a pretty good trade. They didn't have to give up nearly as much as the Dolphins did with Tyreek. So they definitely could be one of the teams to beat, you know, in that division. So my last surprise is the Jags and the Bears. Just what they're doing to help their franchise quarterback. Jaguars-wise, I didn't really like anything they did. I wanted them to come up. I was, you know, me and some friends that are in Jacksonville wanted them to come away with multiple receivers in the draft, you know, kind of like throw everything against the wall. No, they just said, we're not even going to draft one. We're not going to draft one. Christian Kirk, Marvin Jones, and Zay Jones. That's good. That's, I mean, it's better. Don't get me wrong. It's better than last year, but that's not saying much. And then the Bears. They have Darnell Mooney, which I really love. I believe you really love too. And then they drafted a receiver in the third round that is mostly known as a kick returner. He has like 1,400 yards in six seasons. He's old. I didn't understand that at all. So both of those teams, they probably help the defensive side, but that's what I worry about, not helping their franchise quarterbacks because – you understand, like, look at what the Jets are doing with Zach Wilson. They got him Breece Hall and Garrett Wilson, pretty much saying, we got you all this. They even got Jeremy Ruckert, you know, another tight end to help them. where, you know, I think the Bears and Jaguars, I don't know if they're waiting another year, which I hate to let my quarterback not develop another year. So that was a big surprise and disappointment on my part from the draft.
I don't even remember the Jags making a pick, honestly. Like, I, for some reason, can't recall any of their picks. But, you know,
you didn't miss much.
And what's funny is Doug Peterson, I think he has always taken a receiver in the first round of the Eagles. I feel like he always did, right? So I was expecting him to, and I was expecting him to make a bad pick too, because he's always made a bad pick with the Eagles while he was on there. I'm pretty sure he has. But yeah, man, I don't know what they're doing. I don't know what they're doing over there in Jacksonville, but I hope, you know, I hope it works out for them. I hope the best for them. My third surprise was the Brian Robinson pick by the Commanders in the third round. What are you guys doing? I mean, Antonio Gibson's getting no love over there, and this is very concerning. A lot of people are not concerned about it. Some people are like, no, he's an upgrade over Jared Patterson. I'm like, look, Jared Patterson was a UDFA. You guys traded up to get an Alabama quarterback, starting quarterback for Alabama. Like, those guys aren't supposed to be backups. Like, Alabama quarterbacks are starter material. I'm a fan of Brian Robinson. He's my RB3 among rookies. He's my RB3. So I am very concerned for Antonio Gibson. I think Brian Robinson is there to, you know, offer competition. Antonio Gibson had some fumble issues last year. We all know he had, you know, I'm not going to say he had injury concerns, because, you know, he played his ass off through that injury. Like, he got nicked up once, and he played all year. I mean, he's one of the toughest dudes around. But Brian Robinson is a concern, because a running back of his caliber coming from the SEC conference, coming from Alabama, one of the top college, you know, one of the top teams in the entire, you know, all of college football. That's a concern for me. Antonio Gibson's contract is going to be up soon. And it might just be his replacement. I don't know. I think we're going to see. We're going to have to keep a close eye on that one in the preseason.
So, yeah, it confused me because, well, first of all, the Commanders, like, had so many visits from running backs, you know, before the draft. So that concerned a lot of people. And then drafting that, seeing when they have so many other spots they could use help, you know, help shoring up the defense. Yeah, it's very interesting. I don't really know their plan, because I always thought the biggest problem for Gibson was, you know, them bringing back McKissick, because they really like him and they give him goal line carries. So maybe now they're giving Brian Robinson goal line carries. I don't know. I don't understand it, because I think Antonio Gibson has shown that he can run at the goal line. It's just maybe it is some of those injury concerns. They want to keep him healthy. But it just seems like they never want to give him the full, you know, role. So it is concerning. And, you know, we might be looking at a three-way, you know, running back committee, which fantasy-wise doesn't help anyone. NFL-wise, though, it might work for them, you know, to keep all of them healthy. That doesn't help us in the fantasy community, obviously. So, yeah, so that's definitely. So now to continue with our draft talk, we'll talk about our who we thought the best and the worst. I'll start with one of my best. I thought the Jets finally drafted very well. I think they got the best corner, in my opinion, the best wide receiver, and the best running back. They got an underrated defensive end at the end of the first round, Johnson out of Florida State, and a tight end I really like with Jeremy Ruckert that could take over for Uzoma, you know, in a year or two. I think they pretty much put everything out there for Zach Wilson. They're going to develop that offense. So I really liked what they did. And then they are continuing to help that defense. I think the Jets are going to be a very improved team this year. I am a little nervous about that many high-end fantasy players on that offense, because you're asking a lot for Zach Wilson to be able to support all those players, you know, in his second year. So that's a little worrisome for me, but I think they can still all flourish there, you know, maybe not all at the same time this year, but I'm very high on obviously Breece Hall and Garrett Wilson.
Yeah, I think it was refreshing to see the Jets just draft well. I, you know, even if we're not fans of a certain team, it's just nice to see teams draft well and at a professional level and understand how to move around the draft and how to navigate picks and when to go up there, get their guy. So yeah, great job by them. I have faith in them. Even if Zach Wilson doesn't work out, it seems like their team's in good hands. I think the Ravens did an amazing job. When we look at it, like when we look at it pick by pick, I mean, it's just out saying, like, getting Kyle Hamilton to fall to you at the 14th pick. I mean, they do such good jobs with safeties. They're like a safety breeding team, and like getting Kyle Hamilton in that organization is going to be insane in that division. Getting Tyler Lindenbaum in the first round after Hamilton, one of my favorite centers in the entire draft. I mean, this guy, he comes from Iowa, right? Iowa has always produced great centers. Marshall Yonda is from Iowa, and Marshall Yonda mentored Tyler Lindenbaum while Lindenbaum was at Iowa. So Lindenbaum, great addition, great for that team, great for what the team wants to do with their philosophy. Getting Ojabo out of Michigan, he tore his ACL, poor guy, I think during his pro day, but getting Ojabo in the second round, I love it. There's so much for an edge player. They don't have a really good edge player right now. Ojabo is going to be a great edge player for them. Hopefully, I don't think he'll play this year, but I mean, still get the guy, get the talent, right? They knew, like, they're like, okay, this guy's talented. It's a second round pick. We're not burning too much draft capital, but I think if I was a GM, if I was Harbaugh, I would have made that pick as well, because that's just my philosophy. And the Ravens, they're not stupid. They use analytics, right? They leverage analytics. So I respect every single decision they make in the draft. Going down the line, we see Travis Jones, right? They got snaked. I believe they got snaked by the Eagles for Jordan Davis, right? Travis Jones, you know, he's not Jordan Davis, but he's close to Jordan Davis. You know, Jordan Davis is an athletic freak. Travis Jones is great. If you want to compare somebody, I think I heard somebody say Travis Jones, he's a defensive tackle. He's a good comp is Haloti Ngata when he was on the Ravens. So that's awesome. Daniel Falele in round four, huge tackle. So hopefully he goes and, picks up where Orlando Brown left off before Orlando Brown was traded to the Chiefs. And then Charlie Kolar. I love this tight end out of Missouri. No, where is he from? Iowa? He's from Iowa.
Iowa State.
Yeah, Charlie Kolar out of Iowa State. Love him. Sad to see him go there for dynasty purposes because he's going to be stuck behind Mark Andrews. But, man, I'm happy the Ravens are doing this well. I mean, and then they got Likely after Kolar. But, I mean, I love Kolar. I'm not a Likely guy. And then Tyler Beatty with their final pick. You know, that's amazing. They're just adding depth to the running back room and getting a guy like Tyler Beatty to back up, you know, Gus Edwards and J.K. Dobbins. They're not going to get caught with their pants down again. Like, they're going to have Tyler Beatty back there. The guy can catch it. The guy can run it. A little undersized, but he can do it. He's proven he can do it. Loved what the Ravens did. Mostly a defensive draft, but, man, that defense needed it, especially in the secondary. Kyle Hamilton dropping to them, exquisite, exquisite.
Yeah, I was a little surprised they took two tight ends in the fourth. But it made sense because Lamar, you know, is thrown to like 49%, you know, to tight ends, which most of that is Andrews. But yeah, I think Kolar can block and pass. But I think they might use Likely out, you know, at wide receiver some because, you know, he's more of that receiving tight end. He's very athletic, not super fast, but, you know, the Ravens are great at the draft. They're one of the top teams every year. Yeah, and to echo the Ojabo pick, I was happy to see him go there because they actually got Michigan's defensive coordinator from last year. So he knows him, and he was a first round talent that they're getting in the second round. So, you know, kind of might have to wait a year, but I think that's really good. And the team that I thought, one of the teams that I thought did the worst was, you know, I talked about them already, the Bears. They did improve their defense, but they need to improve that offense. And I don't think they did that. This is what I was worried about when the Bears hired a defensive-minded coach. So, and like I said, I think I would have liked their draft even more if they didn't draft the wide receiver they did the third round, not even draft a wide receiver. To me, like, to reach on a wide receiver that much made their draft so much worse to me. So, I spent some time talking about the Bears and Jets, so I don't need to spend any more time. So they were the worst for me.
Yeah, I think reaching on guys like Vilas Jones, like, that just kind of like you just dig yourself in a hole deeper and you feel like you probably have to compensate later on in the draft and probably panic just sits in. I don't know what's going on over there organizationally. I don't know what people they have working for their or a talent evaluation, but it's very upsetting. There are a lot of better players left on the board. The team I think did the worst job, I think, is the Patriots. I don't have faith in them in drafting really anymore. I feel like they just nailed Tom Brady. They got Tom Brady a bunch of years ago, and like just Tom Brady made it work for them. Honestly, like getting a guy like Cole Strange out of Chattanooga, like, you know, he's from Chattanooga, that's from the Southern Conference, in the first round. Like, what are you guys doing taking Cole Strange in the first round? And you know, we talk about Tyquan Thorne. Like, I feel like my thing is they Tyquan Thorne, I feel like they panicked because I think they wanted a field stretcher. Tyquan Thorne is the fastest guy. He was the fastest guy in the entire draft, right? He ran a 4.28 40 time, right? He had a 4.28 40 time. The guy's a burner. He's awesome. But I think they might have wanted Christian Watson because Christian Watson, he went at the top of the second round. And that is another tall, really fast guy. And they might have just panicked with Tyquan Thorne. I don't think he had any business going there in the second round. There's other guys they could have taken. They're taking like Pierre Strong, Bailey Zappi, Kevin Harris. Like, are you like in the conference that you're in, right? You have the Bills, you got the Jets going heavy offensively. You know, you got Tyreek Hill, you got the Miami and you look offense, right? Like, you want to see them give something. You want to see some encouraging signs that they're opening up the offense, but it looks like they're coming in more. You're taking two running backs within like four picks of each other, right? You're just not making good decisions in the first round. You're overvaluing wide receivers in the second round. It's just all over the place. Like, they didn't have JC Jackson's gone. They didn't even take a good cornerback. Like, Get some, instead of taking Tyquan Thorne in the second, get a cornerback with your second round pick. You need a linebacker. Don't skip on N'Kobe Dean. Take N'Kobe Dean. Like, they just can't draft well, man. I'm just going to say it. They don't know how to draft well.
No, I agree. We've talked about Thorne drafting two running backs. Like, you know, that at that time, you know, if it was maybe like the seventh round, I'd be like, yeah, you're just throwing stuff. But, you know, it was fairly early. What are they doing with their running backs? They have so many. Like, unless they plan on trading some of them, I'm like, what's the point? And it's not even like they got, like, I could understand if they got a receiving back, you know, since James White is getting up there in age. But those guys aren't receiving backs. You know, they're between the tackle runners. And you already have two of those with Harris and Stevenson. So, I don't know what they're doing. I think I'm not ready to say they may be in trouble, because some people are, but you know, Bill's gonna have to work his coaching magic, because his drafting, you know, everyone always joked that he owned the draft moving up and down. It doesn't seem like he's doing that as well anymore. Or maybe it was just Tom Brady covered so many mistakes. We never really saw that, possibly. But it'll be interesting, because, you know, I don't think anyone's going to be surprised by Matt Jones anymore. And he's going to have to do more than just manage games that he kind of was able to do last year. So, yeah, I definitely agree. The Patriots, a lot of head-scratching moments for them. So now let's move in.
I'm sorry. Can I just them taking Pierre Strong and Kevin Harris? And I love Kevin Harris, and I hate them for taking him, because they're going to sort of bury the kid. But – like, there were way more probably signed after this, but like, I counted the night or the morning after the draft, I counted 20 running backs who were signed as UDFAs, right? Like, check these guys out. Like, Abram Smith, right? CJ Verdell, once, you know, it was supposed to be a top guy out of Oregon. Who else? Julius Chestnut, small school guy. Kennedy Brooks, UDFA. Saquandre White, UDFA. Devontae Price, UDFA. Jerrion Ealy, UDFA. Letty Brown, UDFA. Like, these guys were all, they can all contribute. Like, Max Borgi was a UDFA. Like, that's just to my point. Like, you don't have to go and draft two running backs unless they absolutely love these guys so much. You don't have to go draft these guys. So many running backs go as UDFAs this year, man. And every year they do. So, like, pump the brakes. You got Ramondre Stevenson and you got Damian Harris. You know, just pump the brakes. Sorry. That was a mini.
No, I agree. I'm glad you brought that up because Abram Smith and actually Jalen Warren out of Oklahoma State are two running backs that didn't get drafted that I think could still have some fantasy value. I'm actually wrote an article that's going to come out, I believe, Thursday, because Abram Smith went to the Saints, you know, and they're kind of looking for that guy behind Kamara. And then Jalen Warren went to the Steelers, and they kind of need someone behind Najee. So I'd like that. I just wanted to mention that. So now we're to our fun part of the show. And in honor of Cinco de Mayo, we are going to talk about our top three Mexican dishes. But first, let me ask, what is your favorite beer to drink with Mexican food?
Well, it's actually my favorite beer all around. It's Modelo, Modelo Especial, the best. And the way I drink it is I put, you know, a little squeeze of lime in there, and I actually take a dash of salt, and I throw it in. I just throw a dash of salt in the beer. So that's the way I drink my beer. My cousin makes a beer moses. You ever had a beer mosa?
Yes.
Yeah, it's just like mimosa, beer mimosa. I've never had it. It sounds kind of sketchy to me. But
have you had a, like a Bloody Mary but with beer?
Well, yeah, that's a Michelada though, isn't it?
Yeah. 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 I'm just saying, I like those.
Those are delicious. Absolutely delicious. Yeah. But yeah, what about you? What's your beer?
One I really like is Pacifico. But the thing is, I don't like it out of draft. I only like it in a bottle with a lime in it. I there's just something get off with the draft kind, but yeah, so any restaurant that I see that, I get super excited. When I went to Fort Lauderdale over New Year's, there was this one bar that had those, so I was very excited. So yeah, that's one beer that I hopefully will be drinking a lot of tomorrow. So we have a work lunch for, you know, at a Mexican restaurant, and then I'm going out with friends at night for Mexican dinner. So two Mexican meals in one day could be some trouble later on tomorrow. So watch out for any updates on Twitter about that.
Be careful out there, man.
I know, right? our top three Mexican dishes. So I'll go first with one of mine. This actually started because of Taco Bell. I was very mad at Taco Bell, but they're supposedly bringing it back this month. It's a Mexican pizza. Not all Mexican places have it, but I think it combines so many things I like. I like pizza, and you know, I like Mexican food. It's very easy to eat. You kind of get a little bit of, refried beans, beef, tomatoes, all cheese. I think it's delicious. So Mexican pizza is one of mine.
Yeah, and I'll kind of go the pizza route with you. And the foods I made are kind of like finger foods because I want to be drinking more most of the time instead of sitting down. I don't want to sit down and eat. I want to be walking around drinking and hanging out. So the foods I made are kind of like in that family. So quesadillas, just plain chicken, just cheese, just a place cheese quesadilla. Pick it up, snack on it, throw back, have some gulps of whatever you're drinking. Quesadilla has always been a fan favorite. It's super easy. It's just like a Mexican grilled cheese. It's delicious. You know, I love it. So yeah, that's my first one.
Yeah, quesadillas are always good, and I like it because so many different restaurants have like different like ways they can prepare it. You know, some people put barbecue in it. You can do chicken, you know, steak. I love that. But a good quesadilla is definitely very good. And next one doesn't necessarily have to be beef, but beef tamale. I love tamales, especially if they're prepared right. I think they're super good. You know, I love like, you know, most kind of peppers and all that kind of stuff. So that fits right into there. So tamale, you know, with, you know, they either put either some sort of red or green sauce on that or even some queso on there. Yeah, I love it.
Yeah. And like, you know, tamale is like one of my favorite foods. Like I'll crush a tamale anytime. And it's funny because like, you know, out here in Southern California, we have like, we're surrounded by Mexican food. There's Mexican food everywhere. In the town I live in, there's Mexican spots everywhere. You know, there's two different types of foods basically in Southern California. That's Mexican food. That's a lot. Tamale, like I've grown up with this food. So like when you asked me like, what's your favorite type of Cinco de Mayo food? I was like, oh, this is like my everyday food. Like I eat this food every day. Like I'm having Mexican food somewhere every day. I had a burrito today for lunch. I'm pretty sure I have a burrito every day for lunch. But yeah, tamale is my second one because it's just so like the the flour or corn around it, like it's just so delicious, and like everything inside is just like so like savory. And oh man, I want a beer and a tamale right now so bad talking about all this, dude. So bad. But yeah, tamale is my second one.
Yeah, my last one is chimichanga. This kind of changed for me. I used to get burritos all the time because chimichanga is like pretty much a burrito, you know, just fried. But I like the crunch in the chimichanga, because sometimes when you get a burrito, like one that you can't just pick up, like you're eating with a knife and fork, with the burrito, sometimes like they fall apart. With a chimichanga, I feel like it stays together a little better because it's fried and a little crispier. So love that, you know, and pretty much anything you fry is going to be good. So, that's the American way. So yeah, chimichanga is my last one.
Absolutely. Good last selection. And, you know, I bet somebody's listening to this right now and they're going, wait, how come they haven't mentioned nachos yet? Well, I'll come and save the day. Nachos, obviously nachos anyway, nachos stacked to the sky with carne asada and guacamole and sour cream and more cheese and more carne asada and black beans and just stack it in the sky, dude. Man, like it's just, they're so good, man. You just go at it for days. You lick the fingers after you eat it. Nachos, dude, all day, man. I'm hovering around the plate of nachos all day long.
Yeah, I think nachos are great, especially like if you're at like a sports bar or something, you want something to share amongst people. My wife always, for appetizers, she always wants to get nachos. So, yeah.
Share?
It's funny.
You say share? Share?
Sometimes.
Sharing food just sucks in general. Sharing food just, get your own, dude. Get your own. My fiance, dude, she won't even let me have a chicken nugget. She gives me the stare of death if I try to take a chicken nugget off her.
Oh man, yeah. So yeah, sharing isn't always caring. Sometimes you gotta care about yourself and just, you know, eat it yourself. But
me,
sometimes I'll share.
Yeah.
All right, so we'll end the show by three players we're buying low on. You know, the NFL draft just happened, so there's some values that are changing. So I'll start with my first one. My first one's Devin Singletary. The Bills selected James Cook out of Georgia in the second round, a little higher than I thought he would go. The fantasy community is going crazy on him. They're, you know, I've seen him, you know, in some of my rookie drafts go ahead of like Sky Moore, Chris Olave, Jahan Dotson, all those wide receivers. And while I think James Cook is very explosive, great receiver, I don't think he's going to be a workhorse back, and I don't think the Bills take him as that. So I think Devin Singletary will still have value, not as much as he had before, but I still think he could have a flex value, and probably with Cook rising so much, you could get him very cheap. And either running back is going to have a limit on ceiling anyway, because Josh Allen gets all those rushing touchdowns. And I don't think a player like James Cook changes that, because, you know, he's more shifty when he's not the thumper that's, you know, going to be the goal line guy. So I think Josh Allen is still going to get those touchdowns.
Right. And yeah, I agree with you about the Devin Singletary, by the way. That's a great one. The more, you know, we think about the James Cook, we always have initial shock when a pick is made. We are either really high, knee-jerk reaction, or really low. But once the waters settle and you think about what James Cook is and what he did at Georgia, running backs in the NFL need to be at a certain build. And James Cook is just not that guy. You can't be James Cook's build and get like 10 carries a game. You just can't. Like, they were looking for J.D. McKissic. J.D. McKissic wasn't going to come in and get 10 carries a game. If J.D. McKissic, who's an amazing pass-catching running back, who's bigger than James Cook, wasn't going to get that, like, we weren't never expecting that. What makes you think James Cook is? Like, fine, he's Dalvin Cook's brother. He's not Dalvin Cook. He's James Cook. And I also want to bring up UDFA that the Bills signed, Raheem Blackshear. He's a near one-for-one comp to James Cook. James Cook is 199 pounds. Blackshear is 198. James Cook's BMI is 27.8. Blackshear is a little bit bigger. He's 29.2. Their 40 times are a tenth of a second off. James Cook is a little bit faster. Raheem Blackshear, in college, in a single season, had 44 receptions. James Cook, 27 receptions. So basically, like what I'm saying, and also Raheem Blackshear more touchdowns, but not that same amount of touchdowns. But anyways, what I'm saying is keep your eye on this guy, Raheem Blackshear. He's almost a one-for-one comparison of James Cook as far as like traits go, as far as production goes. He's a one-for-one comparison. They were obviously looking for that pass-catching running back. And Raheem Blackshear, I think, in deeper leagues, like maybe 20-team leagues, is a good stash because if James Cook goes down, you know, Raheem Blackshear, hopefully if he makes the team, he could be called upon. Anyways, sorry, another UDFA rant. I love UDFAs. Love them. My first one is Devontae Smith. After the A.J. Brown signing, people are going to be low on Devontae Smith. Devontae Smith is an exquisite talent by the talent. I think he's still going to finish around where he was. Obviously, this lowers his ceiling. I think he's still going to finish around where he was last year. I think A.J. Brown, you know, we're going to do the crutch argument. A.J. Brown being around takes the coverage away from A.J. Smith, right? You're not going to have that safety role, you know, to Devontae Smith. You're not going to have the safety rolling to Devontae Smith every single time. You're going to see a lot less bracket coverage. He's going to have a lot more time to get open. So I'm buying low on Devontae Smith. The talent is amazing. He's going to be only in the second year of his career. Maybe they're able to get a better quarterback next year. Who knows? We'll see. But I'm buying Devontae Smith regardless of the situation he's in. He's an awesome, awesome wide receiver, and he's going to be a great fantasy contributor to your teams.
I agree. I think people are going to start forgetting about him. But this, you know, because what he did in his rookie year, I think he could definitely, you know, even with A.J. Brown, replicate that, and you can get him a lot cheaper than you could have beforehand. So to go with A.J. Brown, you know, talking about the Titans, everyone's in love with Treylon Burks, which I really like Treylon Burks. You know, a lot of things you said, I kind of worry about them throwing him in if he is considered their wide receiver one, because he is still developing his route running and a lot of wide receiver techniques. But another wide receiver on that team that I'm buying low is Robert Woods. He tore his ACL last year, but it was about mid-year. So, how people are coming back from ACLs, he should be fine. And I think he still has stuff in the tank. And I think he could be a good player that, you know, since he's a veteran, you know, Tannehill might look to him, you know, because he might be more of the possession guy. And I think you could probably get him fairly cheap right now, especially with all the Treylon Burks hype. So I've always liked Robert Woods, especially since he's played with the Rams. You know, he's not overly flashy, but he just gets the job done and, you know, puts up good fantasy points. So Robert Woods is my second one.
I'm hands-off kind of Robert Woods. Like, I'm not hands-off, but I read an interesting research paper that says that receivers come back on average in 45 weeks from ACL injuries, from recent injuries. Robert Woods is going to be 30 years old. They're not going to, I assume he's not going to recover as fast. I think he'll be at 40 weeks. So when you take into consideration his age and the average of receivers, I think I'm more skeptical on him coming back in time for the season. But I assume the logic, yeah. And Robert Woods is going to be the reliant. Like, he's, you know, light years ahead of Treylon Burks, obviously, you know, as far as route running goes. So if he is healthy, yeah, I get it for sure. I like the pick, but I'm very skeptical on him coming back to start the season. But yeah, if healthy and if all goes well, for sure, definitely. My second guy is DJ Moore. I think he was a buy low as soon as the season ended, and I still think he's a buy low. I don't think people are too confident in Matt Corral being there. You know, Matt Corral doesn't, like, you know, raise the eyebrows and get everybody all perked up. Matt Corral is he's a one read quarterback. But he isn't anything special. He isn't really anything special. Like, he plays some bad football. So DJ Moore, I think, is still on the low. Even if Matt Corral did raise DJ Moore's value, it's not going to be that much. For what DJ Moore gets in that system, DJ Moore gets, like, I think 140 plus targets. He got that last year, right? Even with all those even with Christian McCaffrey there, and, you know, and Robbie Anderson, and maybe Terrace Marshall does something this year, I think DJ Moore, he's a top 10 dynasty wide receiver, maybe top 5 dynasty wide receiver, top 6 dynasty wide receiver. The volume is enough. The volume is your indicator. By the volume, DJ Moore is an already very gifted athlete. By the volume, by the volume, by the volume, by DJ Moore.
Yeah, I tend to agree. I'm higher on Matt Corral than you are, obviously. I actually like Corral quite a bit, but I understand some concerns on him. You know, moving over to NFL and the scheme change. I think the biggest thing with DJ Moore and the Panthers are, as long as they didn't pick a quarterback in that top 10 where they were, people weren't going to be as high because they think, you know, Darnold's probably going to start. So I definitely think that helps in the you getting DJ Moore probably cheaper. So I agree on that part. My last one is Josh Jacobs. He's not going to be as cheap as probably, you know, the other two that I said, but they did not pick up his fifth-year option. They ended up drafting Zamir White. A lot of people, you know, are thinking that Zamir White might take some of that, you know, away from Josh Jacobs, and he might be, you know, the future of the running back or whatever. But I think one thing, even though they didn't pick up the option, one thing they're going to do this year is they're just going to run Josh Jacobs into the ground at least this year, you know, because they don't have to worry about keeping him fresh for the next year. So even that he's still young, I would pay up for him because he, even though he's not a flashy running back, he's performed very well through his career so far. I think borderline running back one both years. So he's someone that I actually went and got before the draft, but someone now I would try to get, see if you can get him fairly cheap.
Well, yeah, I wouldn't pay too much. I'm not too confident in Josh Jacobs' future after this year. What's he going to be, 25 next year probably, or 25? And how, do you know how old he's going to be in 2023?
I think 25. I think he's 24 now.
Yeah, I don't know. I wouldn't pay too much up for him, but yeah, I like the logic. I think he's going to get used really, you know, he's going to be used really heavily. My last guy is Kyle Pitts, primarily because of the Drake London signing. Kyle Pitts' main argument, you know, is that people would, you know, speak for him on his behalf was volume, right? Like, he's the only guy there who's going to get targeted heavily. And people forget that he is an extremely talented tight end, if not wide receiver. Like, he's probably still the best wide receiver on that team. Like, even with Drake London being there, like, I like Drake London a lot, but, you know, I'm not saying don't draft Drake London. Drake London is an awesome wide receiver. I like Drake London a lot. I like his style of play, but he's a different wide receiver. Kyle Pitts is far more talented than he is. Kyle Pitts is much more versatile. He's much more versatile than Drake London is. Again, this is kind of like a Devontae Smith situation, right? You have some kind of talent coming in, and there's a perceived loss of value when there really isn't, because the talent alone is going to keep that player's value afloat, you know, in the long haul. In the long haul, it will. I think this year, Kyle Pitts will be fine. Devontae Smith will be fine. They'll both, you know, they got their second, they're going to have their second year in the league. They've grown as players. They've adjusted. They were both put into, like, not so great situations last year. So Kyle Pitts is a buy. He's an amazing tight end. I feel like I don't even have to say this, but I do, because I've seen people selling Kyle Pitts after the draft. So yeah, Kyle Pitts is my last guy.
Yeah, I think, especially on your buy lows, it's, so no one gets confused. It's not necessarily saying that they're going to be cheap, but they are cheaper than they were before, you know, before the draft. So I just want to, you know, clarify that. We're not saying that, you know, you can get Kyle Pitts for like a fourth rounder or something in 2023. Just saying that, you know, you would have to pay more for Kyle Pitts before. So I
agree, as opposed to like, this. Yeah, like, you would have to pay like two firsts, right? Now you could probably just get it for a first, like a back-end first or something like that.
Right, definitely. Yeah, so that is our show tonight. I'm glad we're reunited again. It was fun to talk the draft. And thank all you guys for tuning in.
Later, guys.